You are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers. Brian Peacock and Eric Crocker with you here at BB Peacock at Eric underscore Crocker. If you ever want to get involved in the conversation, hit us on Twitter there at those @. It's always fun chatting back and forth with you, even those that we have disagreements with occasionally. And I swear I don't mute many people, but Crocker and I were just talking off air. Sometimes you got to mute some folks. And you don't need to hear some of the insane madness that is out there. There's always some crazy talk, and that's okay. And I like it when my listeners get kind of crazy sometimes. So maybe we'll check in on some of those tweets on today's program. I want to highlight something positive that's going on with the 49ers and the secondary, because there's so much negative and so much attention has been put on this Richard Sherman thing. And we covered it, obviously, the day after all that went down, and since then there's been some news, Croc. So I think we should cover some of this with Richard Sherman, and he did have a statement, and I want to read his full statement on social media. It was this quote: "I am deeply remorseful for my actions on Tuesday night. I behaved in a manner I am not proud of. I have been dealing with some personal challenges over the last several months, but that is not an excuse for how I acted. The importance of mental and emotional health is extremely real, and I vow to get the help I need. I appreciate all of the people who have reached out in support of me and my family, including our community here in Seattle. I am grateful to have such an amazing wife, family, and support system to lean on during this time." That is the statement from Richard Sherman, and he has since pleaded not guilty to 5 misdemeanor charges after he was released from jail and had an opportunity to see a judge. So he pleaded not guilty to those misdemeanor charges. So we'll see how that goes for him. And 49ers GM John Lynch gave his support to Richard Sherman in a way, saying, "Look, we will support him and we will help him." Basically, and I like this from the 49ers organization. And this is the Jed York thing. Everybody's talking about winning with class back in the day, and people scoffed at that. But I think it's important, and it's something that Eddie D really set back in the day too. It was like, look, this is a 49ers family. Richard Sherman, not a 49er, but John Lynch didn't have to go out of his way to extend his hand and say, "Look, we're going to support you, Richard Sherman, in this. You're not a current 49er, but we're going to treat you like you're a 49er and part of the 49er family and give you any assistance we can in our organization." So I thought that was really cool from John Lynch.
Yeah, nah, definitely excellent. And John Lynch, he's been a stand-up guy, and it really just shows just how they value the relationship with Richard Sherman. You know, he didn't have to go out of his way to make a statement on the situation with a player that is no longer with the organization. But I think, you know, things like that, you kind of lend your hand and kind of support a guy when a lot of other people are kind of putting out things that go against him. And you know, we did see more and more information that came out as that day went on. But it is good to see Richard Sherman is free. You know, we'll have to hashtag free Sherm or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it was. It's tough too, because even from our vantage point in this situation, there was the leaked audio of the 911 call, and I hated that the audio was leaked, but it was out there. So I was like, man, I guess I gotta retweet this because it's context and it's important journalistic context to what happened. So it tells the story of what happened. So instead of guessing what happened, you get a lot of more information about it. And there's also been some video that was leaked from the front door footage of Sherman trying to get
how
into
does that
house.
Get out?
I don't
how
know, man. I hate that it gets out. I don't know how that stuff gets out, but it's you know, it's obviously evidence. So it comes from there somehow. And I hate that it does, but we know it, and it's information that's out there. And some people came at me and was like, "Well, if you don't like that this is out there, then why are you retweeting it?" And I get that, and that's cool, and I get your vantage point of that. But for me, it's like it's important context because it's public now, so I can't do anything about it being public. It's already public, so I think it's important context to know what happened. So now, you know, you want to know as many details as you can, and I probably shouldn't be public, but it is. What are you going to do? And my account on Twitter retweeting it, so people know more of the facts and more of the story. And you're an adult and you can decide whether you want to, you know, listen to the 911 call or not. And I totally get that if you don't want to. And it's, you know, but I feel like as me, as a journalist, as someone who's covering the team and covering this situation, it's important to know the context of what you're talking about. So I feel like I have to listen to it, even though I hate that it's out there. So yeah. I don't know. It's one of those really dicey situations where, like, what's over the line, what's not over the line. But overall, I think it's private stuff that at some point needs to be out there for the investigation. And at some point, maybe a jury or a court needs to hear these things. But publicly, I hate that we have that information that we are able to hear it. But it's out there and it's public knowledge, and it provides important context now to the situation. So we know really what's going on with Sherman in that night in question.
Yeah, it is tough because probably a moment that he would like to forget, he'll never be able to, kind of live it down because it's always out there on social media. Now, this was a situation where, he didn't harm, his family members or anything like that. When you first see, just the words domestic violence or domestic dispute, you automatically assume, did Richard Sherman strike his wife or anything? So that wasn't the case. But even then, to see himself on video at one of his lowest moments, I'm pretty sure that's something that's tough and you don't want it out there. But it is, kudos to him for kind of owning up to the situation, immediately putting out the statement. And then now I'm pretty sure, trying to figure out how does he move on from there. And I think this is bigger than football. You and I, we talked about it when this stuff came out and maybe, what it possibly meant for his career moving forward. But now, the more things that kind of come out about the situation, you kind of realize, man, maybe he's going through a dark time and we don't need to think about Richard Sherman, the football player. We need to think about Richard Sherman, human, kind of what he's going through and how people or anyone could potentially help him. That was a low moment, seeing him running it, ramming into the door with his shoulder. I'm like, gosh, I hate seeing this. It's like looking at like my little, because he's younger than me, but it's like looking at my little homie and it's like, gosh, you don't want to see that.
No, you hate seeing it and it's public and everybody knows. And even if you just read the police report, it's bad. And then, you just see that play out in real time when you see those videos and you hear the 911 call. And it's bad. It's bad for Sherman. And I think it affects his football playing career and it'll affect the way people look back at his career. It'll affect his future. I think the thing it affects most is his post-football career. Because I think a network that wanted to hire him as a broadcaster maybe might pause a little bit. Maybe it's a tiebreaker to give somebody else a job instead of Richard Sherman. I think what we would have most likely seen with Richard Sherman and that we still might see, but it's going to be more difficult for him now, is be in a front office. I think GM is the ultimate position that Richard Sherman wanted to have after he was done playing. Maybe a team will pause a little bit before they allow him to come into their organization in the personnel department now. So that I think that might hurt him more than even a team that decides they want to sign him, midway through the season once the legal stuff all plays out.
And I think it's even worse when you see it on video, right? Like there was the 49ers have that coach who was with a different team and he was doing coke.
Forster. Chris Forster is now their main offensive line coach. Yeah, but it's been, it takes years to get back to that. And he's just now getting back to the position he had then, right? So he's not even been able to go beyond that position yet. He's just now getting back to that position he had then when that whole thing went down, when he's doing coke with whoever he was with there.
No, he wasn't with, it was like, he was recording a video and sending it to his girlfriend. Like,
oh, that's what it was. He was by himself sending it to his girlfriend who was maybe a prostitute also. that was a dicey situation.
I'm not rich or anything. I've never lived that type of lifestyle. But I'm like, is this what people do? Like when you just have so much money, it's like, you're just bored. You just sit around doing coke and sending videos to, women that are quote unquote night walkers. But there was the other guy too. Was it Jim Irsay? Was he the one with the...
The Colts owner. Yeah.
He had got into a little bit of trouble as well.
Mm-hmm.
Things. When you're the owner, it's whatever. Like, where's my team? I'm going to own this team.
Yeah, you can't fire the owner.
But, with Richard Sherman, there's definitely going to have to be a moment of damage control. And once he does that, then I'm pretty sure the rest of everything else that he's trying to do will start to fall in place and people will start to remember him for Richard Sherman, the football player and turned, analyst or front office exec and not Richard Sherman ramming into his in-law's door.
And so here's the thing. So that if that incident happened, let's see, what year was that with the, so that's 2017, I think, when that thing happened with Chris Forrester, the offensive line coach, and he was not as high profile of a person as Richard Sherman, obviously. Different incident, but that was 2017. Here's a headline.
That was a wild video.
Here's a headline 3 years later in 2020 when the 49ers hired him to be the assistant offensive line coach in 2020. Here's the New York Post headline. Coke-snorting assistant coach Chris Forrester gets job with 49ers. So that's what Richard Sherman's looking at. So he retires next year, and then 3 years from now, 2024, 2025, he gets a job in a front office. Will it say former Pro Bowl cornerback Richard Sherman gets job in scouting department, or will it say burglary, domestic violence charged ex-player Richard Sherman gets job in front office? You know what I mean? Like that's what we're talking about here. It's going to follow him for
a while. That's tough. I'm hoping that it's all pro Super Bowl winner.
Yeah.
Richard Sherman. And it might not be the position right away that he might ideally like. It might
or have what he would have gotten. Now he has to start lower on the ladder and climb up.
Right. There are some guys that have started out right away in kind of a higher exec position. Obviously, I mean,
John Lynch started at GM. That's different. Well, I mean, he spent some time with the, like, it wasn't really, I don't think it was even a paid position, but he was hanging out basically with the Denver Broncos. But he was, you know, I don't know.
But I still think he was TV. I think he was on TV and he was just like,
in the offseason, kind of he was like sort of just moonlighting thing. And doing a little thing with the team and kind of learning and hanging out, but it wasnuesn't an actual position.
Luke Kuechly, I always butcher his name.
Luke Kuechly, yeah. He's doing something with the Panthers, right?
Carried into a personnel position. And Dan Morgan, the O linebacker.
Yeah. Yeah, he's gotten high up now. Dan Morgan is.
I think Carolina just brought him back, but he's been working his way up.
Yeah, he is. Let's see. Assistant GM now with the Panthers, Dan Morgan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's big. That's big time right there. So, you know, but again, they don't have those other things attached to their names like Richard Sherman will, at least in the near future. So he's going to have to really kind of work to overcome that, maybe kind of be in the shadows, working a little bit behind the scenes and eventually work his way up. And I'll be in his DMs telling him that, hey, man, remember me, bring me on.
All right, so I want to talk about a different story involving a former 49er that has retired from the NFL and a feel-good story. Let's talk about something positive going on with the 49ers, with the current 49ers cornerback, and then take some questions next. You know what I've learned about Built Bars, and you hear me say it probably all the time on this podcast, there's no bad time for a Built Bar. One of the best times is a road trip. Have one in your little bag. Have one in your glove box. Whatever. It's a perfect snack. You have a long commute. Maybe you skip breakfast. Maybe you skip lunch. You need a snack, and you can feel good about it, and it tastes great. High in protein, low in sugar. That is the snack you want to grab. And you can grab a box of Built Bars from Built.com using promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off. 9 original flavors like cherry, barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, peanut butter is my favorite, cookies and cream's really good, orange, strawberry, German chocolate, salted caramel, coconut, and they're always filtering in specialty flavors. So go to Built.com and find out what kind of new flavors they've got for you. You can buy a box of one flavor or do a mix and match. Even great for keto diets if you're trying to maintain, lose weight, only 4 or 5 grams of net carbs. So amazing flavors, all tasty, all healthy. You can't go wrong with a Built Bar if you go to Built.com and use promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off the official protein bar of the U.S. track and field team. All right, here we go. So much negative happens, and then a good story comes out and just gets completely buried. And it's not a huge story, right? But this one that was tweeted out by Alex Tran, a.k.a. at Niner Alex. Appreciate him tweeting out this positive story about 49ers cornerback Emmanuel Mosley, who was giving out free school supplies and book bags to the students of Faulkner Elementary School through his foundation, which is called the Mosley Legacy Foundation. And Faulkner Elementary is in Greensboro, North Carolina. And I assume that is where? Yeah, that must be where Emmanuel Mosley came from. North Carolina. I didn't realize that. Okay. But anyway, Faulkner Elementary School and Emmanuel Mosley handing out free school supplies and bags and books and things to kids out there. So it's a cool story. And athletes do a lot of really good things behind the scenes, and there's a ton of foundations with a ton of athletes. And this is just one thing that just kind of happened around the same time as the Richard Sherman stuff that nobody really talks about. And I just wanted to highlight something positive is going on with around the 49ers with the current 49ers player in Emmanuel Mosley. So shout out to Emmanuel Mosley. Shout out to a lot of other 49ers players and a lot of pro athletes and NFL players around the league that are doing really good things too. Those things don't really get talked about. They're not sexy to talk about, right?
I was going to say, like, we probably should take, like, just one segment per week to highlight maybe something that a 49er player has done in the community, because those things are kind of just glossed over, but they go on so often. You know, Eric Armstead does some tremendous stuff in the 916, big-time stuff. I mean, he's had, like, this whole art gallery thing, donations go to all the kids. He's been at camps that I've put on with people from Stockton, and he shows up, interacts with the kids. He's awesome and everything. My son here, Juice, Eric Armstead has been totally cool with my son, and kind of, you know, being like a big brother to him and stuff. So, I mean, like, these dudes do all these really cool things in the community, and nobody ever talks about it until you see the Greek Freak. I just saw a video of him, you know, Milwaukee Bucks MVP player. He hugged a girl, and I mean, this wasn't like a charity event, but he was signing autographs. She had some pictures that she drew of him, and he appreciated that. So he gave her a hug. She's crying and stuff, and it was like a feel-good moment. And I'm like, man, these NFL players, they do these things consistently all the time, and nobody ever talks about anything that these guys are doing away from football. As I mean, obviously what they do on the football field is more, you know, pleasing to fans, but these dudes do some big time things off the field. So kudos to Emmanuel Mosley, utilizing his offseason extremely well, working with a lot of the kids in the community from his area. That's big time stuff. And I think a lot of guys should get some, you know, props for everything that they do in their communities as well.
Absolutely. And Eric Armstead was the 49ers Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee last year, and every team gets one nominee, and then someone eventually wins the Walter Payton Man of the Year award. And Armstead's been working with his foundation, which is called the Armstead Academic Project, doing a ton of stuff in the Sacramento area. So, yeah, good call, Croc. You want to shout those guys out for that. And there's a ton of other stuff going on with the 49ers and a lot of positive things, including Richard Sherman has done a lot of positive things in the community too. So it is important that we highlight those things, and we definitely do not highlight those things and talk about them enough. How about this one, Croc? Some news this week. A former 49er has retired. Ted Ginn, the speedster. He's been around the league. Drafted by the Dolphins, too high. I mean, a lot of people called him a bust early on in his career because he went from being a top 10 pick, I think he was number 9 overall, I think, to the Miami Dolphins, and then ended up being sort of a special teams demon, and then had a little bit better of a receiving career later on. But Dolphins, 49ers, Panthers, Saints at the end of his career, Carolina Panthers there for a little bit. Obviously, he had a ton of speed, so he was able to play for a long time, but ended up being more of a special teams guy and a kick returner, and maybe, you know, a little bit of an extra player, a third, fourth type of wide receiver on the field, and never really, I don't think he had, I'm looking at, let me see, where's his stats here? He never had like a 1,000-yard season, but he had a couple years.
He had a good year with Carolina.
Let's see. Okay. Oh, actually, both his years in Carolina. So this is 2015-2016. He had 739 yards and 752 yards. And then his first year with the Saints was his best year, a little bit more than that, 787. So those three seasons were his three best years. No, I take that back. Actually, year two in Miami, he actually had a nice year. 56 catches, 790 yards, which was his top output yardage-wise in his career. But he did have 10. He had 10 touchdowns the Carolina year. His first year in Carolina, 2015. So probably that's his best year, but that's kind of, that was sort of let's see. So 44 catches, 54, 53, 56, 790, 739, 752, 787. So, you know, 50 catches, 700 yards. That was sort of his peak, and it was a sustained peak that he did three or four times.
So I think what happened was the reason why he was drafted so high, because prior to that, you had DeSean Jackson, who they let fall to the second round. And they saw the way DeSean Jackson changed games and kind of what he was pretty much immediately. Like, I want to say by year two, he was like a 1,000-yard receiver. Like, I want to say his rookie year, maybe he made the Pro Bowl, if not as a receiver, or maybe as a special teamer. But DeSean Jackson right away had success. And Ted Ginn, I believe, was right after DeSean Jackson. And I think, no?
No. DeSean Jackson was at the year after Ted Ginn.
So maybe that's what I'm thinking. Maybe that's why, maybe I'm thinking DeSean Jackson failed because of Ted Ginn. Because they were similar, like these speedsters.
There
and,
you go.
And Ted Ginn was like this electric receiver at Ohio State. And he went top 10. And it just was not good. And then DeSean Jackson was the next year. And I think that's what happened. DeSean Jackson, who everybody was like, oh, this is a first-round receiver. He doesn't go to the second round. How does that happen? And I think a lot of it had to do with Ted Ginn just the year before being a slim-built guy, a speedster, a return guy, and not working out. I think that actually hurt DeSean Jackson. So there we go. I had it backwards.
Yeah, there was some off-field stuff. There was some concerns. It was like there was like old high school buddies and there were some concerns with DeSean Jackson too coming out. But yeah, you're right. So Ted Ginn was 2007, top 10 pick. He had crazy speed, but it was obvious with Ted Ginn too. It was surprising when he went that high because he had this like long stride build-up speed. It was pretty clear what he was, but very one-dimensional with how fast he was. But like he needed some, you know, he wasn't going to be a jitterbug sort of a route runner guy. That's never what he was, but he was just crazy fast once he got going. DeSean Jackson was the opposite. He was like a good receiver and had top end speed along with short area quickness, and he was tougher and he played bigger than his size. And when he measured up at the combine, he was a lot smaller than maybe people thought, because I think DeSean Jackson was one of those classic receivers listed at 6 feet tall, you know, and he shows up, he's like, oh yeah, he's actually 5'9" and 7/8". He's like, okay, well, he's a lot smaller. But DeSean Jackson was just a stud right out the gate. But remember DeSean Jackson, it was always, everyone always ran for, there was like off-field stuff. And it's never like, it wasn't like that he had gotten in a ton of trouble, but it was like, he runs with a certain crowd. Didn't he like do Crip Walk as like his touchdown dance one time too? And people were like, oh, I don't know about this guy. Is he affiliated or something? Like, what's up with this DeSean Jackson dude? And he fell and he went off. He had 900 yards his rookie year, then 1,100, 1,000 yards. 900 again his fourth year. So yeah, he went off right out of the gate, just electric, and he's still going. Did he sign with the Rams?
Yeah, he's with the Rams.
Oh,
wearing number one.
That's a little, he can still play a little bit. I mean, he only had 200 yards last year, but he only played five
he's
games.
A little older, and is, you know, DeSean Jackson, you know, we were the same class of 05. So I remember when DeSean Jackson was coming out, and then he went to Cal. And he was there with my buddy Lavelle Hawkins. Lavelle, you know, he's from Stockton. Mm-hmm. They had probably the best receiver core in the nation that year.
Oh, man,
with Lavelle, DeSean Jackson, and Robert Jordan at Cal. Cal was like, they were different than what they are now. But DeSean Jackson, I mean, just electric. And he still has that type of ability, but it's like, yeah, man, you got to stay healthy. He did have the, I guess you could say, character concerns, ran into that issue a little bit with Chip Kelly, and they ended up letting him go. And he went to the Redskins, went to like the rival squad. But DeSean Jackson, man, he's an interesting guy. Definitely is involved in certain things. I don't want to talk too much about, but there's certain things. There's certain things that I know for sure.
Oh, Croc's got inside info. You're gonna hold out on the inside info, huh? Okay.
Yeah. Well, he's kind of tipped things off, so. He does something that lets everybody know he's, you know, there's something there.
Okay.
But anyways, I don't want to get too much into it.
No, you don't have to say it. You don't have to say anything you don't want to say. I understand where you are. But we're talking about Ted Ginn here. Let's talk a little bit more about Ted Ginn next. And I got a good trivia question for you, Croc, and then we'll open it up to some Twitter questions and finish up this Monday episode of Lockdown 49ers. Gearing up for the 2021 NFL season, you think you might have a little bit of an advantage on projecting what's going to happen this season? Well, you can get in on some extra action at betonline.ag, like odds for which wide receiver will lead the league in receiving yards this season. Stephon Diggs, the odds-on favorite to lead the league in receiving yards at 8-1. Calvin Ridley, Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, DeAndre Hopkins right behind them. Travis Kelce is next at 11-1 odds as a tight end to lead the league in receiving yards. And then you've got some younger players coming up with A.J. Brown and DK Metcalf and Brown's new teammate in Julio Jones. Maybe some better odds down the list a little bit for CeeDee Lamb, the up-and-comer rookie from last year. Justin Jefferson at 14-1. Lamb is 33-1. Brandon Ayuk, 66-1. Who's your favorite to lead the league in receiving yards in 2021? You can find those odds at betonline.ag, just like you can with quarterbacks and passing yard leaders or rookies of the year, Super Bowl winners, win totals for your favorite NFL team, go to betonline.ag and use promo code LOCKEDON. Receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's promo code LOCKEDON at BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. So Ted Ginn has retired. Did you know? This one from Steph on Twitter. I know that this is the last time that Ted Ginn did return a punt with the 49ers, but did you know Ted Ginn still has his last 49ers punt return for a touchdown, and that goes all the way back to 2011? That's crazy, right?
Yeah, that is crazy. And we've seen some returns recently, right? I mean, but they were kick returns. They weren't punt returns. Richie James returned a kick for a touchdown.
Richie James had one, and Ted Ginn had one that same year. He had one punt, one kickoff return for a touchdown in 2011. He also had one in 2010. Those were the...
Reed.
Oh, DJ Reed had one.
Yeah, DJ Reed had one, but those were kick returns. They weren't punt returns.
Yeah, punt returns more difficult. We're seeing less and less punt returns. Kick returns, too. The return game's boring now. I feel like the return game's a lot more fun when we were coming up, right?
Well, they were fun, but they were dangerous. I mean, those are guys. I talked about it. Like, I sucked on special teams. I think that was part of the reason why I just was never going to make it. But you have these dudes that are, like, they know. Like, dude, I'm going to be a special teamer, and that might be all I'm ever going to be, but I'm going to take this job serious.
You got to be a lunatic a little bit.
6'2", 240 pounds, all muscle, run 4.4, and they're just running full speed into you. And they know that, like, this is my chance. All game, I only have this, so many opportunities to do this, and they're going to give it their all. And I just wasn't, I wasn't up to the challenge on that.
You're too smart. You're too smart for special teams. You can say it.
Yeah.
What position were you on special teams, and what would be your assignment?
Oh man,
you on the coverage team?
Of both.
So you're on the coverage team. Like, which number in were you from the outside, and like, what is your assignment? Just to blow up the wedge, because that was back when you could have the wedge, right?
No, we couldn't have the wedge. I think they had just redid the CBA, I believe. So no, I wasn't blowing anything up. I was trying to run down. I was trying to like weave, and you kind of want to run to their butt and kind of get them to kind of speed turn. Mm. So I do that. But guys, that's not what they would do with me. So when I'm there on kick return, I ain't no return man. So I have to actually block. You have to kind of turn and get to a spot and then get set up and be able to almost stalk block a guy that's running full speed at you. And they kind of get to my spot before I got there, and then just boom, push me over. I'm falling all on the ground. It just was terrible. It was terrible.
Did you ever return kicks?
You're bringing up some bad memories. Special teams is tough.
Were you ever a returner, even like in high school?
In college.
Really?
Then I broke my jaw, so then my college coach was like, nah.
Oh, that's when you broke your jaw, was returning?
Punt return.
Oh, wow. Did you ever house one?
No. And I returned a few punts in high school. I didn't house one. Oh, fun fact about Eric Crocker, which is really weird when you consider how how long I played football and I'm making it to the NFL. I've scored 2 touchdowns my entire life. I'm talking about Pop Warner, high school, college, pro.
They offensive or defensive touchdowns?
Both defensive touchdowns. And it's really weird because I was a legit receiver as far as ability goes, but I always get tackled like the 2-yard line, 3-yard line. Like, I just would never get into the zone. Yeah, really weird. I don't know, really weird career, just my whole path. But 2 touchdowns my entire life. I did have a 2-point conversion in a couple times in college on returns, and one in Pop Warner. But the touchdowns were slim.
I don't know, man. I feel like you're overselling your offensive skills because there's a reason you're playing defense. That's just the vibe I'm getting. I don't know. Maybe we got to have one of your old teammates on the show to break it down for us.
I'm going to have a little more. And they'll tell you, like, nah, like, croc, like route running, like, hands. Like, I had it all. But for whatever reason, and I was coming from kind of a different era where we weren't really throwing the ball a whole lot. We were throwing it enough to where I should have had some touchdowns. But it wasn't that, like, air raid what they're doing now, where you got four receivers out there. We weren't doing that.
This one from Johnny, he said, I'm very happy you joined Locked On 49ers. He was responding to you, Crocker, on Twitter. He says, as a Seahawks fan, this is a Seahawks fan, no less. As a Seahawks fan, you're one of my favorite 49er podcasters. I like your style a lot and really appreciate hearing your experiences with the NFL. Keep up the good work, man. You and Brian do an awesome job. So that's from a Seahawks fan talking about how good of a job we're doing here, Crocker. So we got to be doing something right. If not only we got 49ers fans listening to us, thousands of them every single day, but we got Seahawks fans giving you props. So I wanted to read that one.
Yeah, I think the cool thing with that is, you know, I kind of do that too sometimes. Like, I'll listen to other podcast networks just to hear about what they're saying about, you know, just different teams and kind of get a different perspective on things. So I typically do it during the year. So, like, you know, week one, 49ers playing the Lions, like, I'll listen to Lions podcast leading up to it. But he's listening to it in the offseason, man. That's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a lot of fun. We do the crossovers here on the network. So those of you who are new listeners, we're going to do crossovers with the hosts from the other teams that the 49ers are playing during the regular season. And I get a lot of that during the season. And I do that sometimes too during the season. You listen to the other team's podcast and you get a feel for what's going on with the other teams. So yeah, that's a lot of fun.
Oh, I do want to give a shout out to somebody. Matthew Johnson. All right, Matt Johnson, he runs this like big group, 49ers group on Facebook. And he did talk about like how big of a listener of the show he is. He always shows love, loves Peacock, loves Croc. So big shout out to Matthew Johnson, man. Like, he's been awesome. I just got into that group. I don't even know how exactly I got into the group, but I'm in there and he's pretty active, big time 49er fan and loves the show.
Hell yeah. Shout out to Matt Johnson. Actually, you know what it reminds me of? Doris Burke, the NBA sideline reporter, and she's in the booth sometimes. The great Doris Burke.
Yeah, I always remember her because Drake wore the shirt and it was like had her face on it. He was like, "I love Doris" or something like that.
Yeah, there was that one video of her just during a game randomly. The ball gets thrown to her. She's in heels on the sideline working, and she does like she just starts dribbling the ball between her legs. And it was like, dude, this is like, she's still balling. And, you know, it's not like she just came out of college or anything, you know, she's been around doing it for a while too. And I was like, oh dude, okay. Doris Burke has games. She got handles. But she talked about, I don't know where it was. I can't remember. I think it was during a game or like a pregame. And she was talking about prep and how she preps for games. She said she listens to the Locked On podcasts because she listens to the NBA. And if she's going to cover a game between two teams, she listens to the Locked On podcasts from those teams. So it was awesome when I heard Doris Burke shouting out the network and talking about how she does it. So if it's good enough for Doris Burke, it's definitely good enough for fans to get to know the teams before their teams play.
That's right.
There is a question here from Tony. He tagged us in this one. He says, unpopular 49ers Twitter opinion. The 49ers drafted Aaron Banks around too early because they got sniped by the Chargers for Asante Samuel Jr. The front office panicked and just went ahead and reached for Banks. So he thinks they had Banks planned for round three, but they drafted him around two because Asante Samuel got sniped right in front of him. Crocs, what are your thoughts about that one?
They made it seem like Banks was their guy the whole time. So maybe that's just coach talk, coach speak, but it seems like maybe there is something there. Maybe they felt like nobody was going to take Aaron Banks, so they felt comfortable enough trading back, figuring, hey, it might be a round too early for some people, but we'll get him right here at this spot. We feel comfortable with that. We're trading back because we know he'll be there, unlike maybe Asante Samuel, where they probably would have felt like they couldn't move back to get him.
I will say this. It's definitely possible that the 49ers had Asante Samuel, maybe some other corners, some other players higher on their draft board than Aaron Banks and would have taken them at that spot. But if they really loved Asante Samuel, they wouldn't have traded down because that tells me that they were okay with losing Asante Samuel or anybody else who was drafted between when they were picking originally in round two and when they ended up picking after they moved down a few spots and gained an extra pick. So I think that maybe it's possible that if Asante Samuel did slip to them, they would have taken him in round two instead of Banks. But if they wanted Asante Samuel, he was on the board before they traded down, and they could have drafted him there. So they must not have wanted him that much. So I think maybe I'm going to say false on that one, because if they loved him, they wouldn't have traded down.
Yeah, I would have liked to have Asante Samuel. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, no, I liked Asante Samuel. Absolutely. Tyson Campbell was the one I was really eyeballing to start round two, and he ended up going to the Jaguars with the second pick in round two, which surprised the heck out of me, actually. I thought maybe that would have been a really nice fit for the 49ers. Asante Samuel was the very next corner, and I thought they were probably the two most likely players to get picked by the 49ers to start the round. And there was Owusu-Koramoa. There was Azeez Ojulari, the pass rusher, and mm-hmm. there was Terrace Marshall. Those three names, and they were still there when the 49ers did pick Aaron Banks. And there were some injury concerns with those guys. Maybe that scared them off for the 49ers because, you know, what's going on with injuries with them. And Aaron Banks was very solid and didn't miss games.
We talked about going towards more two high scheme, more quarters, cover four, things like that. And I just feel like Asante Samuel really fits that to a T, like just that versatility and where teams might start kind of going with their personnel on the outside. I think he fits that, man.
Yeah, Asante Samuel, the maybe the closest comp to him in the NFL is Jason Verrett, right? When you're talking about height, weight, speed, yep. and style of play, they're not unsimilar players.
Correct. I agree.
And Asante Samuel worked out okay, but looks like, what was it, 4.45. So mid 4.4s at a pro day, you know, where pro day times can be a little bit faster than maybe they would have run at the combine. Maybe that's a 4.48 at the combine, a 4.49 or something like that, which is not blazing for a sort of an undersized 5'10", 180-pound cornerback.
And when I said, like, you know, start looking at guys like Denzel Ward, Jair Alexander, where they ran in the 4.3s.
Yeah. At the combine.
Combine.
Out of time here, Croc. What are we going to do? We've got the roster projections coming up before training camp gets going next week. So we will project the offensive side of the 53-man roster Tuesday. We got a winky Wednesday coming, and then we'll do defense Thursday. Talk to you then right here, Locked On 49ers.